Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Abdullah Samia's show. I don't even have a name for my show. What do I call it? It's just like, well, we've been doing a lot of interviews lately, and they've been really amazing. I feel like talking to people gives you a different insight rather than just me talking by myself. So today I have Abdul. Abdul is in the US. He's a Taiwanese Muslim convert, ex-Muslim. That's quite a handful, quite a mouthful, actually.
Yeah.
How's it going, Abdul?
It's good, good.
Good, good. Yeah, yeah.
And share the story with all you guys, and yeah.
And let's start with this. What motivated you to share your story? Like, why did you want to do this?
Well, after hearing countless of stories of ex-Muslims and how they share their stories, and I thought it was pretty good for me to also deliver my story to inform other Muslims or anyone who is interested in Islam, and just want to let you guys be sort of aware and, you know, sort of think for yourself and have critical thinking, like, is this Islam really true? And really just to give yourself some concern, just to think.
Mm-hmm.
If you're following, whatever you're following, are you just blindly following? Are you really actually understanding? So that's what sort of motivates me to share my story. And also seeing a East Asian person being a Muslim, a lot of you might be also curious and wanting to hear my story. So I thought I'd just share some story with you guys.
Absolutely. Now, before we get into your story, can we talk a little bit about why did you decide to do this anonymously, like to not show your face? Like, what do you want to share with the reasons why you felt that way? Because I think this is important, actually, that you're doing this. And I also think it's important to highlight how difficult this is, and like, why did you decide to not show your face?
Oh, the reason why I didn't want to show my face is definitely I don't want to show myself just yet. I want to just keep everything quiet for a period of time. But I want to deliver my message, so like I said earlier, people can think for themselves and understand if they're just blindly following their religion or not. So that's the main reason why I chose to stay silent. It's just to keep it quiet for a while, and then.
And also, there is obviously some risk involved in doing this, which I
a
think
a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, which
the
is
risk,
like,
it's maybe not as much considering that I am just a revert, a convert.
Yeah.
And luckily I don't have to deal with any family situation because my family isn't even Muslim.
Yeah.
But I have to deal with peer and other social situation. That's what I'm more concerned. However, I think it's not really a big deal just in case. Just want to keep it a little bit quiet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Fair enough. So yeah, we all have different situations, and it's not always possible for us to come out publicly. Mm-hmm. And you know, deal with all of the ramifications that can come all of a sudden. So that's yeah. Fair. So do you want to tell us about how you you know, how did you find out about Islam?
Yeah. So it was in high school. That time I was really curious about religion. I had some Christian knowledge background from my grandparents. They converted to Christianity back in. I mean, my grandfather converted to Christianity back in 2014. So I would often get to go to church and to listen to the preachers preach about Bible. And I found that, hey, this is really different from what I grew up with. Well, growing up in Taiwan, we're mostly Buddhist and Taoist. So Christianity, like, you know, Islam, Abrahamic religions, is a new concept to me in terms of the God and heaven and hell. So I was really, really curious about Abrahamic religions. I sort of did look into Islam, but it wasn't as deep dive. So I first looked at Christianity. As I said, I was able to experience Christianity on early on, and I find Christianity to be pretty fascinating.
Pretty what?
Pretty fascinating.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I didn't make my mind yet. I was just like, let's not make decisions this quick because I want to also explore other religions. Mm-hmm. So I was looking to, you know, like, I listened to multiple of religious scriptures and religious devotional music, and I found Hinduism to be pretty interesting as well. And of course, I become Buddhist back again back in 2016, 2017. And then I went to, and then after that, I actually went deep dive into Islam. I started to study Islam in the summer of 2017. But again, it was just minor study. I didn't really deep dive into it. I was having a lot of questions and I wasn't asking questions just yet. 2018 is really, really when I start to really, really deep dive into Islam. I was introduced to MSA. Back in, MSA is like a Muslim student organization. It's a school where they held meeting every Friday and they give khutbah and they pray namaz and salah. So I went there one time and I really like it. I was just like, man, praying salah sort of gives me a different experience back then. I feel like this is something very mystical and very, sort of gives me like a different personal feeling. So I was really, really, really intrigued by it. And then from there, I've just been really involved in MSA. And then I even fast the 2018 summer, the Ramadan. And then I was just like, wow, this is so good, so cool. Be able to fast and experience different things and experience hunger, and that makes you appreciate food even more. And then I just spent the rest of the year basically talking to Muslims, asking Muslims questions, and just watching Islamic lectures and da'wah and, you know, different Muslim apologetics on talking about Quran. And then really the concept of Jesus is what makes me really, really like Islam compared to Christianity back when I was practicing, back when I was a Muslim. Because in Christianity, they view Jesus as son of God or even God, whereas in Islam, Jesus is a prophet. So that makes sense to me. You know, as someone who's looking into monotheism, how can a man be God and how can one man's life save all mankind? You know, so I was just like, Islam knocked that down and organized that in a very, very straightforward way. Like, you just pray to Allah and you follow Messenger and Muhammad, and yeah, you just follow the five pillars of Islam, and it's as simple as that. So, you know, towards the end of 2018, my good friend was like, you know, hey, actually you should just become a Muslim because I think you're very ready for Islam. You know a lot about Islam already. So January is when I become a Muslim. January of 2019, I was a senior in high school. And I took my Shahada in January. And then after that, I received a lot of congrats. And I was really deep dive into Islam. And I was just wanted to read the Quran. But I was told that, hey, you know, you should read Quran in Arabic. Because if you read Arabic Quran, you get like higher rewards or something.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But for me, I was just like, you know, I have no one really to teach me.
Yeah.
And I was busy with school and college applications and taking care of my business. So I didn't really focus too much on Quran and Hadith. I was just following the basic pillar, like praying the Salah and try to pray on time, basically. That's all I was doing. And then try to memorize some surahs. So I start with Surah Al-Fatiha. That's the one that I actually remember by heart right now. I don't really remember any other surahs of the Quran.
So were you leading the prayer in Arabic? Like you were doing the...
Yeah.
You were doing the proper prayer. Oh, okay.
Surah Al-Fatiha.
Yeah.
And Surah Al-Ikhlas. And that's pretty much it. And I memorized the other surah.
Yeah.
But I did memorize it. And as I was memorizing, I feel sort of special. Like I was telling about when I was praying Salah at MSA, that same feeling. But a year later, sort of like when I was really into Islam, I was starting to wondering something as well. And my two friends who was an ex-Muslim, I'm not gonna mention their names for privacy reasons. One was a Sunni, one was an Ismaili.
You had two ex-Muslim friends you had two. So Sunni means like he was an ex-Muslim, but he was a Sunni ex-Muslim.
Yeah, yeah.
And the other guy was an Ismaili ex-Muslim.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah. So they were, they were my friend. They were been around me for quite a while, and I was actually rooming in with the ex-Sunni Muslim, and he got kicked out because he left Islam. His dad. So it's like
he got kicked out of his house.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, for leaving Islam. And he was telling me why he left Islam, and I was sort of listening to his story, and then it sort of gives me some kind of feeling. I was just in that at that time, I didn't really think. I was like, bro, this guy is just misguided, you know.
Yeah,
and all that, you know.
Yeah,
betraying Allah and all that stuff, like how some people might think of me right now. And for
how tables have turned, eh?
Yeah. For the ex-Ismaili guy, I was just like, this guy wasn't even Muslim, so what's the point of listening to him? He just doesn't know Islam, you know.
Yeah.
He didn't really study Islam. Like, how many Ismailis do you know that actually read Quran and pray to Allah, you know? So I was just like, oh, I'm not gonna listen to him. I just ignore him.
In my case, I'm both combined. I'm ex-Ismaili and ex-Sunni.
You could say that. Yeah.
Yeah. Although, yeah. Like, I didn't become ex-Ismaili atheist. I became ex-Ismaili and I converted to Sunni. So
yeah,
that's the difference in my case. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So these guys told you not to be Muslim?
Well, they sort of warned me, and they sort of gave me reasons as to why I shouldn't be a Muslim, as to why I shouldn't join Islam, because of the quality that's been promoted in Islam. And there are some things in the Quran and how Muhammad was, whatever he did, you know, like, especially the case with Aisha and other things as well. So I was sort of warned, but I didn't really think too much. But then my faith was also inconsistent too. Like, at first beginning, it was like the hot time, like, or like the most practicing time, and then as it starts to get into the year of 2019 of summer, I sort of have some doubt as well. But I was just like, no, this is just shaitan trying to get me out, don't listen to it, shaitan. I was just reciting audubillah, and you know, just like, hey, no, don't worry, don't listen to shaitan. Shaitan tries to make you leave Islam, don't worry, it's just, yeah, misguidance. I was praying, that's why it makes me pray even more, like pray to Allah, and Allah will guide you and silence shaitan.
Yeah.
So then I moved from that city back to the city that I'm in right now. So after I move here, and I'm with my parents, around my parents more, because when I was in high school, I used to live by myself because I wanted to finish my high school in the city that I'm in right now, and my parents living in another city. So I moved there with them to meet them after my graduation. And I was there. I was also not around Muslim communities as well. So if you're not around Muslim, that tends to make you less religious. That's what I've heard. And my experience with that as well. But I was still practicing for sure. I was like, you know, even though I'm far away from the Muslim communities, I wasn't able to go to the masjid and Jumu'ah Salah, I still practice by myself at home, and then I found masjid in the city that I moved to. So I was still connected with Muslims. But when I moved back to the city that I'm in right now, like, as I said, and I started to have doubts. That doubt really came up. The doubt from my two good friends who was an ex-Muslim. That doubt really came to my mind. I was just like, you know, the faith that I'm really following, is it really, really, really the true faith? So I think I've spent next 2 months thinking about it. And the most important reasons is actually right now I'm about to mention. Mm-hmm. Nothing related to Sunnah or Quran or anything. It's just one friend that I made. And we don't talk anymore because of some personal reasons and some problems with him. We stopped the talking, and he was an example of actual Muslim. He was a Salafi Wahhabi, like the hardcore one, and being around him makes me really, really doubt my faith even more, as the stuff that he was saying, you know, he was saying like, you know, you shouldn't greet your neighbors, you shouldn't be around non-Muslims. I sort of, I know that already, but it wasn't too much of a problem for me. I actually was like this. I was cutting off non-Muslims from my social circle. I was actually doing that on my social media. Like, you know, this guy is a kuffar, this guy is a kuffar. I'm not gonna really associate that much with them. So, you know, I wasn't really like that. I was also like that, and I didn't think too much of it. I was like, you know, this is good. Non-Muslims are impure. I don't like kuffars. But then,
The Quran itself says that, right? The Quran says, you know, لا تتكدوا المؤمنين الكافرون الأولياء, right? Don't take the كافرون as أولياء, which is translated either as protectors or friends or allies.
Yeah. Companionship, yeah.
Basically. Yeah, أولياء is basically like, you know, close friends or, you know, protectors. And this theme, you know, Salafis, they're like most, they materialize this most clearly. They're like, yeah, wala and bara, kuffar and Muslims. And even though we're living in a non-Muslim country, somehow that doesn't click in their mind that, like, you know, we need to work together. But somehow it's always about, you know, us versus them, right?
Exactly.
And you got this sort of vibe from the Quran itself, or just from this guy, and this is what caused you doubt, you said?
Well, first it was Quran, like this verse actually, and then I was sort of implying that rules, and then I don't have real life person experience until I've been around this guy and listened to what he said, and that's what makes me start to realize, so this is what real life experience Muslims actually do. And other Muslims I've been around, quite a handful of other Muslims that I've been around are actually like this as well. That's what started to make me doubt Islam. I haven't leave my faith at that time yet, but my doubt was really, really getting stronger and bigger.
But why did this make you doubt? What's the problem with this?
Because I thought, you know, staying away from the infidels, like what they said, eventually causes leaving the fold of Islam and potentially doing something very harmful. Like they said, they will kill the idolaters, meaning people who worship idols, like I was, like Buddhism and Hinduism.
So what I'm trying to get at is, did you feel like this was an immoral teaching? This is a bad teaching, or how did this become a problem for you? Like, why did this become a problem for you? Like, for me, when I read this, you know, believe it or not, I converted to Sunni Islam. So before that, I never read the Quran, because Ismailis, for the most part, they don't really care too much about Quran.
Uh-huh.
When I started reading the Quran by Yusuf Ali, I had this big, thick Yusuf Ali translation of the Quran that my dad had, and he got
from one of my bookshop as well, actually.
Oh, yeah. And when I got to this ayah, and I was reading it from beginning to end, I was like, you know, I was, again, reading the Yusuf Ali translation, let not the believers take for friends or helpers unbelievers rather than believers. Okay, if any do that, in nothing will there be help from Allah. Okay, so except if you want to take a precaution, it says. So I asked my mom was Sunni Muslim, right? And I'm like, what is this? Like, and this is like when I was a new Muslim, like, I don't know, 20 years ago or something, right? Like, I was like, what is this saying? Like, I don't get it. Why is it saying this? Like, it, to me, it didn't click in my mind. I didn't understand, right? I didn't think of it as, okay, this ayah came to, you know, Muhammad's companions in Medina. And this was very specific for their situation where they were having a battle between, you know, Makkah and Medina and, you know, the Kufar and this and that. And, you know, very hostile situation. Somehow this has become some universal teaching. This book has become universally taught now that it's full of wisdom for all of eternity and all of mankind. Whereas it doesn't even make sense, right? I mean, to me, that was how I took it. Now, is that what happened to you as well?
Sort of. And moreover, it's more of an immoral teachings. Like, you don't see this in other religions. Like, they're not as xenophobic as Islam. Mm. Like, for example, Christian says, you should love your neighbor, even your enemies. Like, that's what I was being told about Christianity.
That's
actually true. I actually confirmed it with my grandparents. That's before a few days I left Islam. I was asking my grandparents countless of questions. And they're actually wanting me to become Christian. But now that I've left Islam, I'm not really interested in Abrahamic religions. But I'll get into that in a little bit. First, I want to
just focused on this, what, you know, other than immorals, I also think that this sort of limited you from also achieving your potentials. Because if you're so like xenophobic and not wanted to be around non-Muslims, you're not really going to get anywhere that far, especially living in the US. This is not a Muslim country, right? And if this is what this religion teaches, then I don't really understand how is this religion spreading so fast. Because Buddhism and Hinduism and Taoism and other religions like Jainism, Sikhism, Christianity, they never ask you to stay away from non-Muslims or infidels, that's what it's called. Yeah. So that really makes me start to wonder and think a lot about Islam.
Mm-hmm.
I don't view it as much as anymore. And then also not be able to practice my culture, because I was told by my some Muslim friends, like, hey, you shouldn't celebrate Chinese New Year. You shouldn't have all these, you know, calligraphies, Chinese calligraphies around, and what else? I have some trigonometry thing hanging on in front of my door. It's like do you know anything about not yin yang? It's not yin yang. What is that called? Feng shui. It's like our cultural folk practice. Like,
okay,
since our house is in the T section,
mm-hmm,
we like to put on the lock, like the protector, evil protector. And that friend who I was talking about came to my house and he said, you should take this off. You know, you should throw all your incense away. This one. We, in Chinese culture, Taiwanese culture.
Yeah.
This is like very, it's like a big deal.
Yeah.
To a lot of Taiwanese folks. They like to hang this in front of their house to protect themselves from evil, so the evils won't enter the house, basically. It's like a folk practice.
Yeah.
So that guy, he saw this. He came to my house and he saw this. He says, bro, you should take this down. This is encouraging evil eyes. the Nizar, basically.
Yeah.
And I was like, what? What are you saying? Like,
yeah.
I didn't know all this. I know it, but I wasn't a critical thinker, like I said. I became a critical thinker, and then to me, this has just started to become ridiculous. Like, what is this religion teaching?
Yeah, so that's the problem, right? When people convert to Islam, they don't realize this is like kind of like the dark side.
Yeah.
And we talked about this in my previous stream, that when you become Muslim, like, suddenly there's, it's not just like you adopted some spiritual practice, which you have, also have all of these obligations that are like put upon you, like, oh, you work in the music industry, oh, you gotta quit your job. You have this things, like, in your house, I'll stock for the law. You have paintings, you have photos, you have pictures, and you have this cultural thingies, and no, I can't have that. That's just,
yeah, exactly. So then that's when I was started to feel very distasteful. So it's like, man, why? I'm just practicing my culture. It's not anything against Allah, you know. I'm not worshiping other gods, or it's not like I'm having Buddha or my ancestors there, so I venerate them, worship them. I actually do that right now, but when I was a Muslim, I never do that.
Yeah.
So I was like, what's wrong with having, you know, Chinese, Asian culture thing in the background? I don't understand. So that's what really makes me feel tired.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, some guy just comments Feng Shui.
yeah so that happened. So the Salafi guy came over and he was telling you all these things, and then what happened? So this made you have some doubt.
Yeah But doubt was sort of, I was just like, you know, maybe I should leave Sunni Islam and maybe become other Muslim. Mm-hmm. So I was a non-denominational Muslim. I was just like easy modern Muslim for a couple of months. So, and it's under the quarantine as well. So just been thinking about Islam and non-dimensional Muslims and having doubts about it too. And then even then, as I was thinking, I was just like, you know, if those practices aren't good, and the Quran has some dark side, and the practices is just not appealing, and it's not very, some of them are very immoral. So then it made me to realize there is no point of being a Muslim in anymore, even if Islam were to go through Reformation. Okay, let's say that Islam gets passed off out, like, okay, like Christians went through Reformation, whereas they focuses more on love rather than just, you know, hey, strict following doctrines, you know, love your neighbors, just like Christian says, love your neighbors, and if you live by the sword, you'll die by the sword. Let's just say if Islam gets to that point, it's still not going to change the fact what Prophet Muhammad did. So, you
Like
know, how
what did he
can,
do? Like, what do you mean
well,
specifically?
see, pedophilia is the biggest one that actually stuck in my mind. Like, how can a person of 50 something age be around a child who's not even reaches puberty? This is what makes me really, really wonder, you know. And other stuff as well, like forced conversion, had a sex slave and had multiple wives and forced his religion upon others and killed so many people in Medina and Mecca and anywhere around his neighborhood, and just basically how he got ideas from other faith that was present in the time of pre-Islamic Arabia. So this is what I came to a conclusion. If our prophet can't even do certain things and he was not being a very good role model for humanity, then obviously his followers are not going to follow him, you know, take him very seriously. And to most Muslims, they don't really think about it. To them, they're just more of an identity. So they have those saying of, oh, I am a harami, I am a halal person. So then,
Hello, boy.
exactly. So then I was just like, what is all this? This isn't pointless. If our greatest figure of all time can't even do it, then how can you expect your followers to do it? So obviously this religion is false. This prophet is false. And reading Quran, you also don't realize, you also do realize that this is really not the word of Almighty. Because everyone, even if they're not Muslim, not Christian, even if they're not following any specific religion, they always says this: God is love, right? God is moral. If you do believe in God, God is about moral. God, people with religion, they won't do bad things. But Islam is different from other religions because, like I said, I just mean I like I, the qualities that I mentioned and what the Prophet did.
When did you find out about all these things about Islam, about what the Prophet did, and how did
Well,
you find out after you became Muslim, or was it like did you just come up with excuses why it was okay at that time? How did you
See,
handle that?
like those other things that I mentioned about Prophet Muhammad, I didn't know any of those. Yeah, I know I knew he was a pedophile, and other stuff I wasn't too sure about it. I was just like, maybe this is just some Islamophobes. So then,
You're using that word, Islamophobes.
like people who are against Islam and they hate Muslims, and that's what I was thinking. But then I justified the situation with Aisha. I was just like, you know, people from back then, it's okay for them to do that because it's like a cultural practice. So that's what I was think. That's what my thought was. You know, it wasn't a big deal. It was just time. You know, we're in a different time. We're in modern time, so this is not acceptable in 21st century.
And I think that's to be clear, I the marriage to a child it was very common back then, and not to make excuses for it, it's definitely wrong, but it's less wrong back then, which is why you don't find any of the opponents of Prophet Muhammad mentioning that he did this. It's more wrong now because we've learned that these things are wrong. We learned we didn't they don't they didn't even have an idea of consent. There's no such concept of consent in Islam. There's that the idea is just missing. So we've evolved a morality and we understand that children cannot consent. We understand that that you need to be basically physically able at at a certain children cannot there's a lot of dangers of child marriage. For example, like in Africa, a lot of young women get pregnant and then the baby can't come out and they get what's called a fistula, where there's like a hole that rips up inside them, and then all of the, you know, excrement, it just comes out, you know, and they, and what happens is they can't go to the washroom properly. They have to, and it causes a lot of, all of this because of child marriage. So we've learned all of these things and we know it's wrong. The problem is when people say Muhammad is a perfect role model for all of all times, for humanity, for, you know, and that is where the problem is. If you just look at him as a typical warlord from the 7th century who had a child wife and whatever, that's, he's like a typical guy from the 7th century that did this, you know what I'm saying? But like Genghis Khan or whatever. But like, if you want him to be the best example of all humanity, then why would he do that? Because that's, you know, there's going to come a time where humanity is going to say, whoa, this is bad. So that, you know, so that's how I see it. I don't like to use the word pedophile because it's a bit of, you know, you're kind of like projecting, you know, this kind of new term back onto their age. But I think if he was truly a pedophile, he would have had more than one child bride. He just had one. Yeah. And the rest of his wives were, you know, I'm not saying they were like in the 50s or 40s. Some, they were pretty young. I mean, Hafsa was pretty young. But they were like, you know, maybe 16. Some of them were 20 in the 20s. And the fact that if he, with the power that he had and the unlimited access to marry whoever he wanted, including Zainab, which was completely taboo in that society, never mind marrying a child. Marrying a child, nobody even blinked. But marrying your adopted son's, your son's ex-wife, that was really bad. And he still did it. He still did it. He still managed to do it. And he didn't care, right? He's like,
That's also another thing about Prophet Muhammad that I came to aware, but I forgot to mention in my my previous discussion.
Go on, So can you
Like, you know, what you just mentioned about him marrying his adopted son's mother, ex-wife.
So that's wife, and then she became ex-wife, I guess.
So that's another reason for me to not like him anymore and not think of him in very high regards.
So all of these things came to a culmination. And one day you just decided to leave Islam, or what happened there?
A few weeks ago, I after watching countless of videos on critiques of Islam, like the David Wood and Apostate Prophet, because I was having really, really strong doubt and I didn't know what to do in Islam. It's just very getting really confusing. So I want to hear different opinions from free thinkers, not just Muslims, because obviously, you know, they're going to deny. They're not going to, you know, they don't know. And half of Muslims don't even know as much about Islam as David and Apostate Prophet. So I look into them and then I started to came up with conclusions from there, because they don't lie about Islam. They actually study Islam. They don't just take sources out from Quran and just like, oh, you know, hey, this is Quran. This is what it says in the Hadith in the Quran. They actually put it off from actual quote from Quran. They're not making up at all. I used to think that they're making up, especially David. He was someone that I truly disliked when I was hardcore practicing Muslim. Yeah. And now I actually find him to be the other way around. Like, this guy actually knows about Islam than most of Muslims. And how I was deceived by so many, many Muslim scholars, such as Zakir Naik.
Zakir Naik, oh yes.
Yeah. Like, there's just so many flaws that David point out about this guy. Like, oh my God, I was a follower of some guy who deceives people. So all these combinations, all these new information that I've heard about Islam is what makes me to just make my mind, like, you know, Islam is bad. Islam is inherently violent. And especially if you look into chapter 9, Surah At-Tawbah, the most violent chapter of Quran, too.
Surah Ahzab?
No, At-Tawbah, Tawbah.
Oh, Tawbah, yeah.
Surah 9.
Yes.
So this is basically what I came to a conclusion after hearing multiple of critiques about Islam and how Islam is just not adopting to modern times, you know. And even if, like I said earlier, even if it went through Reformation, it's just not going to change what the Prophet did, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this is what came to my conclusion. Like, you know, Islam is, I'm leaving Islam, basically.
How do you feel about that? Like, are your friends Muslim? Do you have Muslim friends? Like,
yeah. Most of my friends are Muslim, like I said, and they're more of a holding on to Islam as an identity rather to actually focus on its practice. Some aren't, but even then, they're discouraged from questioning and discouraged from reading Quran in English or whatever language they speak. So they're not really reading Quran and the source and the Hadith. Most of them just follow Islam because their parents are following Islam like that. And to be honest, they don't even follow Islamic teachings as well. A lot of them, they eat non-Zabihami and they still listen to music. A lot of them are artists, music, and basically just like normal human beings, right? They're not really like someone who's stuck with religions. So again, it's their choice. But this is what I was said to them, you know, if you can't follow a religion, and I know that this religion has a lot of different flaws and different things that just not needed anymore, you might as well just consider leaving it, you know? And Islam held you back from achieving your potentials, right? Because you have to worry, oh, if I become a musician, is it okay for Islam to be a musician? Is it okay for Islam to be this, be that, be this, be that, you know? And you can't even work in a bank as well because interest is obviously haram. Yeah. And then I was worried, you know, hey, if interest is haram, then how would I ever be able to buy a house? I have to worry about, you know, this and that. And then that was also one of the reasons actually that came up with my mind. It's like, why doesn't Islam allow interest? And then, yeah, it's just like, it's just confusing.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's quite a question. What's the big deal with
practices interest, right? In Islam? Sorry to interrupt. But yeah, just some of the practices in Islam is just, it's very outdated, you know, and it's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Sorry, hi. Here.
Yeah, definitely there's a lot of outdated practices in Islam, a lot of values that honestly we don't need anymore, or we shouldn't have, you know, the whole thing about child marriage. I mean, why are we even having debates about these things? The whole idea of magic being a real thing, sorcery and magic and superstitions like evil eye, and, you know, in a 21st century, like, we know these things are not real. It's yet we still have these vestiges from, you know, ancient times that people take far too seriously. And unfortunately, they, you know, they continue to burden us as a society, as a humanity.
Yeah, humanity. Exactly. And then they're not. And then the other thing is, like I was mentioned, I kept mentioning, they're not allowed to question. And that's not a good thing, because if you're not allowed to question, then basically you're just blindly following. You're not really thinking critically, you know. And to me, that's really important. I've learned this from English class, that critical thinking is very important. So I guess that sort of helped me. From what I've learned from English, I took that critical thinking knowledge and I applied it on my faith. Yeah, because I'm not really following 100%, so I was able to think critically. Whereas people who are just, they're too scared to tell often, you know, so they just secretly not practicing Islam. Like, that's what a lot of my friends are. At least what I've seen, what they're doing, they're not really practicing Islam. They're just,
you know, I actually used to think that a lot of people are closeted ex-Muslims. Definitely there's a lot, especially nowadays, there's a lot of closeted ex-Muslims. But like, there's this weird type of Muslim that you find, which is they don't practice Islam, but they still believe in it. Now, this is to me, I find that weird. Now, I'll give you an example. I actually had a cousin that was not practicing, you know, I think he used to drink alcohol and party and all that, and he was Muslim. When I converted from Ismaili to Sunni and I had a big beard and I was praying five times a day, he looked up to me and he was like, "Mashallah, you are the best. I want to be like you one day."
I actually got that too.
Yeah, here's the thing. When I left Islam, I told him, I thought he'd be like, because he doesn't practice, right? And Yeah. I thought he would be like, oh, that's, you know, maybe Islam's not true actually, right? Because if you left Islam and, you know, you actually converted to it after analyzing it and whatever, and now you've seen that it's false. I thought he would be like, yeah, Islam's false too. But he was like disappointed. He was like, and even my other, you know, family members that are not practicing at all, you know, wearing hijab or whatever, not wearing hijab, I mean, they don't do the first or the last thing about Islam other than maybe the Eid namaz on every one, twice a year they go for Eid prayer. They don't pray. They fast sometimes. They don't fast sometimes. They're like completely liberal. Yet they were also disappointed that I left Islam. So it's very weird. It's just like, I don't understand how people believe this thing.
See,
yet they don't take it seriously. Big problem.
You know, this is a big problem. Like, you holding on to a, you know, religion that has so many, many ridiculous stuff. Yet, when you see other people left, you just become disappointed when you yourself are just not even practicing. Maybe you even find it ridiculous as well. Sometimes those people who find it disappointing to see ex-Muslims, they might even think some of the stuff that is ridiculous, but again, they're not going to tell you, because obviously they're forbidden from saying, right? Because if you say that, you're not trusting you're not putting your full trust in Allah, basically. So that's the problem that I find now that I've left.
Yeah, there's a lot of cognitive dissonance, I think, in the community. Muslims who I think they have doubt, like you said, but I don't think they're quite ex-Muslims. And sometimes it actually goes the other way. Like, these doubting Muslims end up going full hog religious. Like, they just become, they feel, you know, ashamed, or they feel sinful for their past lives and they want to make it up. I mean, even, you know, to be frank, some of the people that become terrorists, they were formerly like non-religious Muslims. They just like, they feel so, because they have this guilt, because Islam teaches you all this guilt and shame about, you know, all of these things they're doing. Maybe they have a girlfriend, or maybe they even, you know, they've hired prostitutes. I don't know what they did, but like a lot of these people, and then they feel guilty about it, and then they want to make up for it. So they go and become jihadis, right? Yeah. I mean, that's like the worst thing that can happen, is if someone, so that's why, you know, this shame is so, it's so harmful, you know, it's because people don't know how to deal with it. People don't know how to let go of it. And this is one of the problems with religious teachings like that.
Yeah.
Because what's the outlet for that? I mean, theoretically, all they need to do is ask Allah for forgiveness. They don't need to go and blow themselves up or something. But for some reason, some of them decide to go all the way that way. And maybe there's more to it than that. Maybe it's that combined with depression. Right. Maybe you know, some of these people, they don't really have any, I mean, frankly speaking, they don't have any meaning in life. They don't have anything going for them in life. They're like isolated. They're like loners. Maybe they don't have friends, you know, and the disconnect, and a big part of it is a lot of them are disconnected from the community. So, you know, this combined with the religious fanaticism can actually become a very, very dangerous cocktail, you know?
Exactly. Basically like an indirect way of suicide, basically.
Yeah, exactly. That's basically what I'm saying, right? Like a way of like a get out of jail card, right?
You get
to kill yourself, and you also get, you know, all of these beautiful things in the paradise for doing this. So it becomes a sort of escape, I think, a very, very dangerous.
Like they, especially, you know, you get a high rank in Jannah, like you strive for Allah, basically fight for Allah, right? You get like a very high rank in paradise. I think they sort of take this as a advantage to get into that position.
Yeah, exactly. It's like the martyrs are the highest rank right after the prophets, right? So there's the prophets, which you can't become a prophet, obviously, because Muhammad's the last prophet. And then after the prophets, there's the shaheed, right? So the shaheed is like, you know, the sins are forgiven. They're not even questioned about the sins that they did.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like, you know, 100%, you know, get into paradise instantly, basically, right? Assuming that you actually were fighting for Allah and not for human causes or fame or whatever like that. But it's very tempting, right? If you really believe, you truly believe that this is real, and you know, this is, I mean, frankly speaking, if people actually truly believe, why doesn't everyone go all the way? Why would you just do half-ass job? Because it doesn't make sense, you know what I'm saying? If this is true and hell is real and heaven is real, why just stick around here and be a bum and don't pray sometimes and pray sometimes? Like,
this
like,
is actually a very good this is actually a very good point you brought up. And then also my friend who was an ex-Ismaili, who also was a strong critic of Islam, and he actually watches your channel and Act 17 Apologetic, which is David, and Apostate Prophet, I believe. So this is the this is something that he was telling me, you know, if you can do fully, then why just focus on half of the religion, right? It's, there's no point. You might as well just let it go completely, you know, so that you live a more productive life. Because, you know, what's the point of, you know, taking like, I don't know, 5-10 minutes out of your day to pray? And that total is like 1.5 hours. Because you have to pray 5 times a day, yeah.
So yeah,
it's like you take an hour of your time and pray.
Unless you want to, right?
And that's also thing, Blackstone, right? Was something that I never thought about it. But after I watched Apostate Prophet, that's when it started to make more sense, right? If you don't see other, you know, Abrahamic religions like Christianity, I believe Judaism too, they don't pray to a certain directions and facing a stone. Or a temple.
Yeah.
They pray anytime they want. Anytime when they feel they want to ask Lord's forgiveness or Lord's protection, they just pray. They can pray anywhere. Like, I'm sitting here right now in front of my desk. I can pray. If I was a Christian, I can pray right now. But if you're Muslim, you know, you have to pray 5 times a day facing a... Not saying that you can pray dua. You can pray dua anywhere. But I'm saying, like, you have to pray 5 times a day. It's a lot. And it's obligation to pray to a stone, and that stone was a temple.
Yeah. So that
it was a Meccan pagan
idol,
exactly. And why, as Muslim, you're praying to a idol when Islam prohibits idol? So yeah, that's what really come to my mind. Like, see, yeah, that's doesn't make sense if you claim your Abrahamic religion and that you don't worship anyone else besides God, right? God is not visible, but why are you praying to a former temple?
Yeah, exactly. So the whole thing about the Kaaba is, one, like, there's no mention of the Kaaba in pre-Islamic sources in any way whatsoever. So for example, like Christianity, Judaism, there's no mention of any Kaaba, which is apparently the most important, you know, place of worship of Allah, of God, the true God, the same God of Abraham. Yeah. Yet we don't hear about, you know, Abraham going and building a Kaaba. So what's more likely, that this house was already there and Muhammad decided to make it into the house of Allah? Or maybe it's truly the real first house of worship, but then why don't we find any evidence of that? Why don't we find any references to that? Like something so important like that. And of course there is evidence that this was a pagan house of worship. I mean, we know there was 360 idols according to the story in the Kaaba or around the Kaaba.
Yeah.
Muhammad wanted to break them. There was also Allah was also worshipped. So the pre-Islamic Arabs definitely believed in Allah as this high God. And they knew about Abraham, they knew about Mary and Jesus and all these things. There was, you know, all of those cultural and religious symbols were there. But Muhammad is the one that said, you need to now, he made this part of the official religion that you have to pray towards the Kaaba, not worshiping the Kaaba, but towards the Kaaba, even, you know, as a form of unity or whatever. But again, like, where did this come from? Why don't we find this in the previous religions from the same God? There's a lot of things like that, you know, there seems to be a disconnect when it comes to Islam. Just like there's a disconnect when it comes to Christianity and Judaism. Like, Jews would say a lot of the things in Christianity don't make any sense. Christians have thrown away all of the rules, right? Because of Paul. Mm-hmm. Paul said you don't need to implement the letter of the law anymore because Jesus fulfilled the law. So Jews are like, what? No, we still need to, right? We still need to do all of these things. We still need to eat kosher. We can't eat pigs. Christians are like, oh, we eat pigs now. Jews are like... So there's a disconnect. And then with Islam, there's another disconnect, because then you have all of these new things that Muhammad claims are always there, yet they weren't always there. They're like new, right? They're coming from paganism and they came into Islam. Yeah. So that is a good point. Even the whole thing about facing the Kaaba, it really makes more sense on a flat earth, because on a ball, like if you're facing into space, you're not your direction doesn't curve, right? It's not like your direction you're facing, unless it follows the rules of gravity, like a cannonball, it would go around in a circle towards the Kaaba. But I mean, it's silly. Like, it's on a flat Earth, it makes sense. Everybody can face, you know, like the Kaaba, right? Mm-hmm. But on a round globe, actually, when you're facing a certain direction, you're actually looking into space, right? It's not going to curve around, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And really, really good point. That's actually very true.
So now someone's asking, where did I get this pagan idea from? You'd have to be a little bit more specific what you mean by pagan idea. But like, there's a lot of evidence that basically the Kaaba and Muhammad's religion, and, you know, he was just following. This was, so people need to understand that at the time of Muhammad, there was many different things going on in Arabia. One was, there were people called Hunafa, Hanif, right? Monotheists. So there were people that were monotheists who claimed to follow, some of them claimed to follow Abraham. There was Jews, there was Christians, and then there was the polytheists, right? Now, even the polytheists, they used to believe in Allah. Allah means the high God, the you know, the true God, or whatever you want to call it. But they felt that Allah was unapproachable because Allah is, you know, like, you can't see Allah, whatever. So they used to make intermediaries because they're like, you know, Allah is a big guy. He's too busy to talk to us. So we need lesser gods so we can actually see them, we can pray to them, and they will, you know, they'll talk to Allah first because they're like more like us. So they understand the problems we have in our lives. And then, you know, Allah, he's so disconnected. So, I mean, this is human nature. Like, humans always do these things where they try to be logical and like, yeah, there's a big God, but the big God's busy. So we'll pray to small gods. And the small gods, and the same thing happens in other, like, you find, you know, like, for example, Zeus, Jupiter, you know, like the high gods of the Greeks, the high gods of the Romans. They had high gods as well that were like high up, unapproachable. So they had demigods as well. Now, Muhammad, he wanted to follow this monotheist trend. And so what he did, he's like, I want to get rid of all the small gods. We don't need the small god. And that's the same thing that happened with Christianity and Judaism. Judaism, there used to be lots of gods. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, lo and behold, Yahweh, the Jehovah, became the one god. The war god became the one god that they worshipped to the exclusion of all the other gods. And he was the one that if you worship him, he will, you know, he will take care of you and protect you. And he was a jealous god. He was a jealous god that didn't want you to worship any other god except him. So the same, this is humanity. Like, this is what humans do. We started off with all of these different ideas of gods and, you know, nature worship. And then we had many gods. And eventually we have one god. And that's how we've evolved. And today, like, majority, I think, of people on the earth are monotheists. And that's probably because, of course, the monotheist religions also had certain characteristics that made them spread. Like, you know, evangelism.
Evangelism, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then, of course, with Islam, there's jihad, offensive jihad. There's a blasphemy law. There's apostasy law. So all of these things make the religion spread, basically, right?
Yeah, which is another thing that I find this religion to be very different from other religion. Also was the spread by the sword, basically. You know, whenever Muslims, after, I think, 150 years after Prophet Muhammad was gone, his companions or his followers was able to conquer a lot of places, and that was through basically, well, not directly sword, but it ultimately ends with the sword. So they were giving a choice. You can say shahada, or you have to pay jizya. But if you refuse to pay jizya, then that's when swords come in.
So how does this become? So now when you look at that, when you look at what Muhammad taught, when you tell the people to accept Islam, if they don't accept Islam, make them pay a tax. It seems like this whole thing is about money, because if you convert to Islam, then you send the zakat money back to the Baitul Mal, the treasury, right? So the tax collectors come from the central government of the Muslim empire, the caliph. The caliph sends the tax collectors to get the money. If you're not Muslim, then you pay jizya. This whole thing is about money and power. And the interesting thing is that when Muhammad died, a lot of the Arab tribes, they're like, we're not going to pay zakat anymore. We only pay to Muhammad. We're not going to pay anymore. And Abu Bakr had to fight them in order to get them to pay the zakat money. Like zakat nowadays, people think of it as it's just like it's for the poor and this and that. But like apparently back then, it was like important enough to kill people, like kill Muslims. These guys were Muslim, except they didn't want to pay zakat. And he's like, I'm going to fight them, whether they give up on salah or whether they give up on zakat. Basically, he's going to fight them for money. This is Islam right here. Like this is the best companion. These are the companions of Allah, companions of Muhammad, the ones that Allah said he's most pleased with. Like killing people for zakat. I thought zakat is you'd be punished for it if you don't pay your zakat on the day of judgment. Why do you have to kill people for that?
Exactly. So again, like the point that I made earlier, this is not Allah's word at all. Like I was saying, Allah is God, like universe, like this is Arabic term for God, but that God is a universal God for everyone, whoever believes in God. So how can a universally loved, uncreated, on no ending, eternal force will allow such kind of immoral act, especially when it's a head of a religion? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you don't find that in other religions. Yeah. So Islam is very unique and very different from other religion in a lot of sense.
Islam is different from other religions, but even like Christianity did have an unholy alliance with the government for the longest time, which is why I think we need secularism. When the religion, you know, creeps into the government, when you have theocracy, you end up with things like, you know, witches being burned, and you know the Spanish Inquisition. You know, where they killed a bunch of Jews and Muslims, and you know there was a whole Crusades thing. So you know, it's true that, you know, to come to that is more difficult from Christianity compared to Islam, where the concept of jihad, and it's right there in the Holy Book. And not only that, the Holy Book is supposed to be for all times, so it makes it even more a part of the religion, and it makes it even harder for people to get rid of it. Whereas, you know, with Christianity, and it's not really like,
Christianity. The crusade was just, it was started by someone who was more of
the Pope,
wanted to have a power.
The Pope.
Yeah, yeah. Or basically like they want power.
Well, they wanted to capture Jerusalem, right? I mean, the idea was to get back the Holy Lands. Mm-hmm. And again, anytime you mix religion and politics, I think it's a bad thing. I think in general, Christianity and Judaism and all of these religions, I think they have the bad parts and the good parts. But when you have secularism, then you at least have some separation, and you don't get, you know, the problem I think with religion is when religion, like there's an interesting meme I've seen, which I really like, which is about, there's two guys sitting on a bench eating ice cream, and some guy comes up and says, my religion says you can't eat ice cream, right? So the guy's like, so don't eat ice cream. Like, okay, you can't eat ice cream, then don't eat ice cream. Like, leave us alone. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
you know, it's like the problem with religion is when it oversteps and it starts to impose itself on my personal space. Like, I have my rights. If I want to eat pork, I mean, I don't really care too much about pork, but I'll eat it. I mean, whatever. You shouldn't stop me. I mean, frankly speaking, I think none of us should be eating meat. If that's a totally different story. I think it's better not to eat meat. But like, it should be a personal decision, right? It shouldn't be like force other people to. Like in India, you have this like thing with beef.
Mm-hmm.
Beef. You cannot eat beef. If you're a Muslim and they even think you're like killing cows or, you know, selling cows, you will be like, I mean, there's examples of people that were like brutally killed because they were accused of, you know, like selling beef, Muslims. Like, because they know Muslims eat beef. but they don't eat beef, right? They don't eat beef. So Muslims, as a workaround in India, what they've done is they're selling buffalo meat, because buffaloes are not holy, only
the cows,
the milk cows or whatever, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's a problem. If you don't want to eat meat and you're Hindu, don't eat meat. I'm sorry, whatever. Don't eat beef. It's up to you, but don't expect other people to bow down to your religious belief, which is personal to you, right? So that's a problem. But yeah, you're right. In today's world, Islam does cause a very unique and special problem in many ways. I would agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. So exactly. The point about Hinduism that you brought up, and Buddhism, I think they're also encouraged to eat vegans, be a vegans.
Yeah.
Buddhism,
yeah,
sort of by influence from Hinduism. So they encourage their followers to eat meat, vegans, to not eat meat.
Well, at least vegetarian, right? Because milk is okay, cheese is okay, and stuff like that, right?
It is, but okay.
Even with Hinduism, I think there's different castes, and some of them are allowed to eat meat or something. I don't know the details exactly, but I know that what I've seen is men tend to eat meat, but not women. I don't know why. And once a week or something.
Buddhism, Buddhism. We don't. There's no caste in Buddhism. That's how it got sort of offshoot from Hinduism, because Buddha was objecting the system, the caste system. So he sort of like disagreed with Hinduism.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of concepts are very similar, like from Hinduism.
Yeah. So I want to make an appeal to those of you who are just joining now, or you just recently joined. I'm speaking to Abdul. Abdul is a Taiwanese Muslim convert who is now ex-Muslim. He converted to Islam about, after, I guess, reading the Quran, talking to Muslims and going to the mosque. And he actually fasted and he prayed five times a day, did the whole thing. And then as he started to learn more about Islam, he decided to leave Islam when he found out it was false. So here I am, we're having this conversation, and it's been a great conversation. For those of you who are new to the channel, please subscribe. Thumbs up to this video as well, so that YouTube knows to share it with other people. Also, to those of you who are supporting me, Solitary Emmy, Food and Religion, all of my patrons and all of the new members as well, P and the other, and the rest of you, thank you so much for your support. I really do appreciate it. And those of you who are new here, please consider joining the channel. On YouTube, it's for as little as $2 a month. On Patreon, you can set a custom amount. The money does help. The support does help. People don't realize how much time goes into this, how much money goes into this. To fix the lag issue that I was having on the videos, I had to spend almost $500 to upgrade my computer with a new video card and a video capture card. These things don't come cheap. But I think everything is pretty set now. Now it's just the monthly fees and, of course, compensation for the amount of time that I have to put into. So please do consider supporting the channel financially. If you cannot support the channel financially, you can always help out by contributing subtitles. Details are on my support page, abdullahsamir.com/support. So please do consider joining the channel or supporting it in any way that you can. Now, Abdul, I want to talk about where you're going to go from here. So now you've left Islam. What do you have to do now? Are you going to tell your Muslim friends, or you're probably just not going to tell them yet, I guess? And if they ask you, did you leave Islam? Like, how are you going to deal with that? Like, it's going to be challenging because most of your friends are Muslim, like you said, right?
Yeah. So for now, as of now, I will not announce officially. I'll just keep it quiet. And I'm just going to let time speak itself. And if anyone finds out, I'll just tell them, hey, I know it's disappointing and I know it's not a very good news. But yes, if they ask me, I'll tell them I have indeed left Islam, and I'll just give them the reason, and then I'll just tell them you shouldn't either, but I'll leave it up to you. It's a personal choice, but I will give them reasoning as to why they should also leave. And then, if I lose a friend or anything, I don't want to, and it's hard, but I just want to let truth speak itself, I'd rather stand my ground. Yeah, basically that's what I would do. It's it's again, it's hard to lose friends, but that's just how it is sometimes.
Yeah, and you know, that's when you find out.
And I hope they really, sorry,
go ahead, but
I really hope they will understand and, you know, respect my decision, basically.
You get to find out where your true friends are when you leave Islam, yeah. Because the people that don't care about you and care more about your religious beliefs, or the too indoctrinated, they will be like, I don't want to be friends with you anymore. People that are actually care about you will not abandon you just because, or cut you off just because, you know, you don't follow the religion anymore. The thing I find is that, unfortunately, some people, you know, they're just too much in the matrix. They're just too brainwashed by this religion and the belief system that they're not able to continue being friends with people that are not Muslim. And again, when you talk about Islam being unique, I feel like it's not totally unique to Islam, because I've heard the same thing from ex-Jehovah's Witnesses and ex-Mormons. But like I've seen that like Christians tend to be more tolerant to people that doubt or disbelieve. Jews are like way more tolerant in general. I mean, at least in Canada where I am. Like what I've heard is people even go to the Jewish temple and they're like, I don't really believe. And they're like, yeah, you're still Jewish. You're still Jewish. You know, it's like, whatever. But like, it's not like that in Islam. It's not like...
Jewish is more like a... Also, it could also be an ethnic identity.
Yeah.
It was rather the religion. Because if you look at half of the people in Hollywood or the Wall Street industry, and give you a biggest example, Bernie Sanders, he's Jew.
Yeah.
But he's not practicing Judaism, or he's not even part of Judaism religion, in fact. So
yeah,
I can see what you're talking about.
Yeah, and like Mark Strait is saying, you know, try to find new groups of people, and that's a very good advice, because unfortunately, when you make relationships with people based on religion, that becomes a common bond, and then it becomes really difficult for them to see you in a different way, right? Like, whereas when you have friendships based on, like, you know, like you become friends based on a common interest, like biking or camping, or, you know, you just like become friends for video games or something else, they're not going to leave you because you no longer play the game or something. It's like, you know what I mean? But the religion thing, it becomes almost like a cult. And that's why sometimes people say Islam is like a cult, because it becomes...
I actually agree.
It becomes like a cult, right, in some ways, because you can't leave it that easily. You have all of these things.
And
you have
to... This is also something that I think about a lot when I think about my Muslim friends. And I feel like a lot of them are just friends with me for religion. I'm not saying that it's true, but this is my personal feeling. Like, guys, are you friends with me, but... are you just friends with me for religion, or is it because we really have something we can have bond together, or are you just friends with me because I've converted to Islam? I think about that a lot, and then I was just thinking, this is ridiculous. If that's the case, then this is really ridiculous, because the moment that I've leave Islam, you guys will just basically abandon me. I was also warned by my friend. My ex-Smiley friend. Yeah. He told me about this as well when I was a practicing Muslim. He's like, you know, this is a cult. And if you leave the religion, those people will no longer associate with you, or not have too much to do with you, basically. So yeah, the point that you brought up is very good. And yeah, it's becoming cold in this situation. It is actually.
And I think, again, I've come to realize that it's not a cult for everybody, because, for example, those liberal Muslim friends, the ones that drink, and maybe they don't drink, they don't have to drink. I don't mean only the ones that drink. I mean the ones that don't take the religion seriously.
Yeah.
They have non-Muslim friends. They're like, if you tell them, you know, Islam says these things, they'll be like, what? No, Islam doesn't say this. Islam doesn't say you can have slaves. No. What are you talking about? Muhammad killed all those people, Banu Qurayza? No, he didn't. You're making this up. You're a liar. Like, they're like shocked if you bring up the actual evidence from Islam history, because that's not what Islam is to them. To them, it's like you said, it's like an identity. It's like some sort of cultural heritage. It's like, you know, a pick and choose kind of Islam, like a watered down, you know, identity thing.
Exactly.
So, but unfortunately, unfortunately, even these people get offended when you attack Islam because they're like,
I don't see the reason why.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. That's what I wanted to, you know, to tell my friends if they or anyone that knows me that I'm that I love Islam. You rather holding on to an identity like this, and when you not even practicing, and then when you get called out, or what your religion, your identity supposed to get called out, you just deny it.
Yeah, definitely. And I do think that, like, if someone, like, if I meet a Muslim, the last thing I'm going to bring up with them is, you know, Islam. Like, I don't care. Like, it's, I don't like to talk about this in real, I mean, I love talking about this. Obviously, that's why I have a YouTube channel. But, like, I'll wait for them to bring it up if they want to discuss it. I'm not like, so your religion is false. You know that, right? Like, I don't go around talking like that in real life. Personally, yeah. I have my outlet, which is my online activism. So if I have Muslim friends, which I still have a few Muslim friends, we don't talk about stuff like that. We talk about other things. We talk about Bitcoin. We talk about technology. we talk about things that are like, and we
more of a ordinary conversation.
Yeah. And sometimes we talk about Islam, but we've got to the point of agreeing to disagree. Because I know, like, no matter what I tell them, they're not going to agree with it. And they know they're not going to convince me. So we're at a stalemate. So I'm like, yeah, you can live your life as a Muslim. You know, it doesn't bother me. I'm obviously not Muslim, but that doesn't matter, right? The activism is the activism. And, you know, for the people that don't know that you left Islam, you don't have to tell them. Like, you don't have to volunteer that information. I even have Muslim neighbors, like, next door. They live next door. And they saw us. They thought I was Muslim.
Oh,
and they say salam to me. I said, walaikum salam, whatever. And then, you know, I told them at one point, the way I do it is I say I'm not religious. That's what I say. And that's, if someone says you're not religious, that's not like, they don't take offense at that. They're like, okay, he's not religious. I don't take it seriously. And then, you know, as time went on, I actually told them, like, I don't really believe in this stuff. It's not just not religious. I don't believe in it. But of course, I don't tell them about my YouTube channel. There has to be some personal security in my life, too. I can't just go telling Muslims where I live because I don't know how they will use that information against me. Unfortunately,
exactly.
In this case, I can't trust any Muslim. Unfortunately, I'm like sorry to say I cannot trust any Muslim with this information because it's been used against me before. So people tried to call up my office and get me fired. So
yeah.
Nobody tried to kill me, thankfully. Nobody's attacked me, but I mean, I have to be careful. And it's unfortunate, but that's what it is. So, and I don't know which Muslim is suddenly going to like try to, you know, like dox me or something like that. So it is what it is, unfortunately, but like, it doesn't matter. Like, you know, you left Islam, you don't have to tell anybody. They don't like, whatever. If you want to tell them, you can tell them, but you don't have to, and nothing will happen if you don't. It's up to you. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely.
That's my advice. Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, if you want to help them, you know, like I had a, you know, two guys call a conversation with two guys yesterday, two ex-Muslims. And one of them, he left Islam and he told his friend, but he waited until his friend was kind of ready to tell him. And before that, he would just ask him questions. He would say, I have a friend who's asking me this. What do you think about this? And so he kind of, you know, paved the way for the guy to start wondering some of the things and questioning until eventually he decided like he's just going to tell his friend and he doesn't care what happens. But he didn't just drop the bomb right at the beginning and give an excuse to his friend to cut him off. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
That's basically it. Do you want to say anything else? Do you want to discuss anything else before we end the conversation? Because I've taken a lot of your time and thank you so much doing this.
Yeah, absolutely. No problem. Pleasure.
Yeah, this has been great.
It's good to have a discussion for sure. I wanted to talk to people for sure. Talk to you specifically. Well, before I reach my conclusion, I just wanted to briefly sort of share with people about my current spiritual status. Now I am more or so towards following my ancestral religion, my original, or if you consider Buddhism as a philosophy or maybe a religion, I don't know what you maybe it's both. So I am more of that. But again, I'm not really deep dive into it, but I do go to Taoist temple and ask my masters to predict my future. So I still have beliefs about supernatural beings, as I was brought up to believe in that really, really strongly and firmly believing it. Now I don't take it for granted. So I take it and I think about it and I think critically, you know, is this master, whatever he's saying, is it really actual evidence or is it just something to consider about, but don't take it too literally and just for, it's like an insurance basically. I just basically think about this and I also believe it at the same time, so just in the middle basically. So that's my spiritual status and just kind of want to share with.
Do you believe in God?
People. Yes, I do.
I think that's a good approach to take, like just be a little bit skeptical. I think skepticism is one of the best things that we have. And, you know, if you want to be religious, go back to your, you know, in some ways it makes the most sense to go by what you've kind of grew up in because you have that connection and there's no need to throw out the whole thing, right?
Yeah.
Necessarily, unless you want to. But if you don't want to, that's fine too, right? I mean, whatever and, works best for you in your life.
Yeah, exactly. And then another thing about Buddhism and Taoism is that it doesn't have any restrictions on what you can do. What you can do is more about discovering yourself through meditation. You find enlightenment through meditation, basically. You're basically following the teachings of Siddhartha Gautama to enlighten yourself. So Buddhism is, I think it will be really easy. Even an atheist people can practice at some, even it's even suitable for atheists, you know, because they don't really force, you know, you don't pray, like you don't have to go to temple at a certain day, like in Abrahamic religions, Christian, Jews, and Muslims. So the Dharmic faith, that's what they call Buddhism, Dharmic faith, and Taoism is Eastern faith. So Eastern faith, like, yeah, you know, you just focused on yourself, discovering yourself through meditation and peaceful meditation. Have you heard of Qigong? It's like a martial art sort of. So it sort of connects with culture. So this is another good thing that I think Buddhism and Taoism is good for humanity. And it gives you a lot of thinking abilities, like critical skeptic and skepticism thinking abilities as well. So that's just wanted to update about Buddhism and share a little bit about Buddhism basically.
Mm. Oh yeah, this looks cool. I definitely like meditation. I think it's a great thing, mindfulness. If you're interested in an atheist that actually talks about that, check out Sam Harris. I love him and I love what he's doing there with the whole mindfulness thing. So this is great. Yeah, thanks for the call. Yeah. Thank you to everyone who donated and joined the channel as well, and to all my patrons and supporters. And for all of you, we're here today to keep this thing going and keep sharing these videos and let's get this message out to more people. Abdul, there was a comment in the chat a couple of times saying that you should do this in Taiwanese. You should make a video in Taiwanese to help people I don't know how many Muslims there are in Taiwan and I don't know how effective the Dawah is over there.
Yeah, well, it's not very strong presence, but you do get a small community of Taiwanese Muslim originally who came from mainland China when the government of Taiwan right now was separating from mainland China, and the Muslims, they came from with the civil war in China, they came to Taiwan after 1949.
I see.
So the Muslims community from all over China and all over and other provinces came to Taiwan.
So I think that's a good place to end though. We wish you well and good luck in your new life as an ex-Muslim.
Thank you.
I hope that everything goes well for you and you know, the challenges that you have to face in making new friends and maybe telling, you know, some of your friends that you're not Muslim, you know, I hope that goes well for you and I wish you all the best and you know, keep
Thank
in touch
you.
keep in touch on, sure. You know, you we connected on Instagram. I don't check Instagram really often, but I do check Twitter more often than Facebook. But yeah, do keep in touch, and we'll hopefully have another chat one day. Maybe in the future, once you're completely out, we can actually do it in video. That'd be
fun. Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Well, I'm definitely looking forward to that. And as for everyone else, I'm hoping to give you guys more guidance, and I will study a little bit more about Islam so I can help people furthermore.
Wonderful. Okay. Take care, my friend. Bye.
You too.